The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it, you don't need it, but you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
Tommy's here. I am here. The show today brought to you by the Circa Million and the Circa Survivor Pools out in Vegas. $14 million in guaranteed prizes. No rake. If the entries go above the guarantee, all of the extra money will go into the prize pool. You've got until September 9th at 2 p.m. to enter. The Circa Million is pick 5 games every week, NFL games against the spread. At the end of the year, if you've got the best record, you win $1 million, but they've got another $5 million in guaranteed prizes. The Circa Survivor Pool, $8 million guaranteed to the winner or winners. You pick one team each week to win, no spread. You can only pick that team one time during the season. If you're the last person standing, $8 million. The Circa Million and the Circa Survivor Pools out in Vegas, the biggest and the best contests going. You do have to be out there to enter, but weekly picks can be made through a proxy from anywhere. Tommy, I'm going to be out in Vegas at the end of next week. And I'm going to go visit Cooley after I'm in Vegas for 2 days. My oldest son, who lives in Los Angeles, he's going to meet me in Vegas. We're going to do a quick 2 days in Vegas. My niece lives out there, so I'm probably going to see her and her brand new baby. We're going to try to work that out. I'm going to stop by the Circa. I'm going to enter each of these pools. Say hello to our good friends Tim Murray, and of course hang out with Aaron a little bit, the producer of this podcast, and I might just gamble a little bit as well. That might happen. You know, I should have done the Cooley piece first, because when I'm in Vegas, and you and I have been in Vegas together before, yeah. I just don't sleep much. There's not a whole lot of sleep. Anybody that has the gambling Jones that I've had throughout my life, especially when you're at a casino, you go up to the room and you're trying to fall asleep, and then you're like, damn, I'm going to go back downstairs. And it just is not a lot of sleep that is had. But I'm looking forward to a couple of days in Vegas and then a couple of days with Cooley in Wyoming. And then I will be back. So, by the way, heads up, end of next week, Thursday, Friday, and then the following Monday, more likely than not, we won't have shows, although it's possible I'll record a show before I leave. When's the last time you were in Vegas? Because there really hasn't been a fight to cover.
The Mayweather-Pacquiao fight.
Oh, my God. That's how many years ago is that?
I don't remember. Here's what I remember about it. I was sick. I had a leg infection.
I remember that.
And I checked myself out of the hospital to go to a Cigars and Curveballs event that Monday night, and then flew to Vegas on Tuesday, and then flew back Sunday and checked myself back in the hospital.
I remember that now. I do remember that. The fight, by the way, was 2015, May in 2015.
Okay.
You went. I did not go. That was a one-person deal, and Tommy went because you and I were doing the show at the time. There are a couple of those fights where you and I were both out there together, but that particular fight,
you were
out there.
We were both there for Mosley Mayweather, right?
Mosley Mayweather, Pacquiao Hatton.
Yeah.
And there may have been another one. Oh, yeah. The Mosley, that was. I sat with you at that fight. You and I sat together, you know, at that fight in the media section. We had pretty good seats for that fight, if I recall, in the media section.
Well, the media section, the seats aren't as good as they used to be, but they're still good seats.
Yeah, they're still good seats. Yeah, it's been several years since I've been out there as well. Yeah.
I got a question to ask you about flying, because I'm about to fly across the Atlantic to head to Spain. This is my last podcast.
I know it is.
Until September.
Unless you feel like one day you just want to call in and tell me how the, you know, summer in Spain is going.
Okay. Anyway, I noticed this when I was flying back from Key West. And I was sitting in an aisle, and there was and my wife is sitting next to me in the middle, and there's a woman sitting by the window. And she has the window down the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, when did we as a society become so bored with looking out at the sky at 35,000 feet in the air?
It's funny.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I like looking out the window.
Yeah. No,
it doesn't happen that you're not up there that much.
Well, and if you're sitting, you know, in coach or, you know, premium economy, and you have the seats where there is somebody at the window and somebody in the middle and somebody on the aisle, it's the person that is next to the window that kind of controls the window situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can tell you this, the flight attendants on long, you know, transatlantic flights, the windows are down so people can sleep.
Now, yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
On red eyes, I understand.
Right. But I'm with you. I love when, look, from 35,000 feet, if it's clear and I can see, great. If it's just clouds I'm looking at, not interested. But I love looking out a window when I'm flying into a city. By the way, I love looking out the window when I'm flying into this city. You know, especially certain, that runway, the Potomac River landing at DCA, at Reagan National, is one of the most beautiful landings of any landing at any airport in this country, I think. You know, when you're coming down and you get, you know, the monument and the Kennedy Center off to the left. And by the way, it's not the easiest landing for pilots. You know, they have to make that hard right. Yeah.
It's a dicey airport to land at.
Yeah. It's that hard right turn, and then they got to get it down quickly. And it's not the longest of runways either. But I love, you know, as you're flying down the Potomac, or by the way, if you're coming up the Potomac from the south, just looking out and seeing the city and trying to identify, you know, different areas and neighborhoods. My house, both currently and my house previously, are in the flight path of that landing, you know, the beautiful landing into DCA. So there have always been planes flying over my house. And when I've been on one of those planes, more times than not, I can find my house. Certainly can find my neighborhood on that landing. I like looking out the window,
you know,
too, is my answer to your question.
I've done that, too. When I used to fly in and out of BWI a lot when I lived in Columbia.
Right.
I remember finding our house, because we were clearly in a flight path one time on a landing. And I came home and I told my wife, I said, you know, we should sell advertising on our roof, because you can see our roof from the airplane.
That's a good idea. What did she say?
She said, Jesus, you're such an idiot.
Yeah. What did she say about the Hemingway contest? Was she all for this or not?
She was a great soldier. She was on board for the whole thing. And basically, you know, sat there and for three nights in this hot weather, you know, sharing a bar stool with me. And she was a trooper. She was really good. I mean, much more support than I deserve.
Tommy's got a really good column. He talked about it on the podcast on Wednesday, but he's got an excellent column in the Times. You can access it through his Twitter account or mine. I just retweeted it this morning. And it's a really, really good column. I mean, a lot of these stories you told the other day, I think that it's hard for me to believe that anybody had a better story or a closer connection to, you know, Hemingway himself, as you did interviewing the old man.
Yeah.
But like you said, there's an investment that needs to be made by you in this contest before they take you seriously. So we're a few years away from you being a legitimate contender. You weren't even on the board before this contest.
No.
In 4 or 5 years, when we're talking about it, you may be one of the favorites. Now, my question...
Well, I'm not doing... No more. No more. The story alone should have made me a finalist.
I was going to ask you that if you were to go back and do it again, would you go with the same 30-second story?
You know, I don't think so. I don't know what I would do.
Is there a better way that you could have presented the story?
Huh?
Is there a different way that you could have presented the story? Did you have any pictures of Fuentes?
Yes. I had a blown-up picture of me and the old man.
Yeah.
You know, that's proof, because anyone could go up there and say that they hung out with the old man and the old man in the sea, but I brought receipts.
Tommy, in his final paragraph of his column, you know, discussed that he is beginning his end-of-summer Spain trip for a month, and he called it a decompress Danny retreat. But then you end with, you know, a big bang. I expect big things from Josh Harris and the new Washington Commanders when I get back. We're all expecting some big things. Actually, I don't have any expectations. What are reasonable expectations for the first few years of new ownership? There's a question for you. What's a reasonable expectation level? Super Bowl is not reasonable. You know, one of the best teams in the league record-wise over the next 3 years is not reasonable. What's reasonable?
Here's what's reasonable. Competent and the best front office personnel you can get. The best. The best that's available out there. I expect this ownership to pursue the best personnel people they can find. And along those lines, I expect them to do the same thing for a coach, for a head coach, the best that they can get. That's you know, everything else will fall into place on the field if they do those things.
Yeah. I treat your fans, your customers well, and be humble. That's the starting point, because the fans, the customers have been treated poorly, and the team has been arrogant for so long. So start with just treating people the way you would like to be treated and be humble. You know, second is what you just said. I want them to go out and hire the best that they can hire to run the football operation. And then I want that person to truly be, along with the head coach and the players, the faces of this franchise. Okay, I don't want it to be ownership. I don't want it to be anybody on the business side of the operation. I want somebody who is a bona fide NFL, you know, senior VP of football operations, and let that person make all of the football decisions, including hiring the coach. Now, I'm not saying to Josh Harris, you can't be involved in the hiring of a coach. He's the owner. Of course he's going to be involved. But that's to me, those are the expectations. And if those things are priorities, then you're going to end up with competence and, by the way, some compassion for a recovering fan base. And I think people will feel good about it, that they are rooting for or now they're back rooting for, you know, a normal functioning NFL franchise. In terms of the results on the field, that'll be determined by the person that they hire to run football operations. By the way, did you see, and I talked about this yesterday, did you see the Sean Payton comments about Nathaniel Hackett? Have you seen those yet?
Yes, I did. You know, everyone worships at the altar of Sean Payton, but this arrogant son of a bitch got suspended for a year from coaching. Let's not forget that.
Well, Greg Williams had something to do with that, didn't he?
Yeah, well, Greg Williams was a lone wolf?
No, I know.
Sean Payton seems like the kind of guy who's hands-on with everything.
I talked about this.
I mean, he may be a great coach, but he's also full of himself.
There is no doubt he is full of himself. He's also, as you said, a great coach. He also had a Hall of Fame quarterback for all of those years in New Orleans. You know, we are seeing, look, I'm not going to take anything away from Bill Belichick. I think Bill Belichick is at the top. Certainly, if he's not the top, he's in the top two or three in the conversation. But he is 500 with one playoff appearance and no playoff wins since Brady left Foxborough for Tampa. Sean Payton had Drew Brees. And by the way, not every one of those teams was a playoff team. You know, Sean Payton, the Saints had, I remember this because their defense was horrendous. And it was part of the conversation about, you know, the elite quarterbacks and can they overcome, you know, subpar everywhere else on the team. Well, Drew Brees and Sean Payton together couldn't. There was a three-year period, I want to say it was 15, 16, 17, something like that, where they went 7-9 three straight years and missed the playoffs. You know, which may also speak, by the way, to Drew Brees, who's a Hall of Fame quarterback, no doubt. But I never felt like Drew Brees was at the level of the top three or four elite quarterbacks in the game during his time. A great quarterback, Hall of Fame quarterback. But I don't know. I think
not a Brady, not a Rodgers.
I think a Rodgers and a Brady.
Not a Manning.
I don't know that they would have gone 7-9 with those teams. But for those that missed. Go ahead.
Now, we've discussed this many times, but I think it's always worth warranting, is the list of coaches who have won Super Bowls with more than one quarterback is a very short list.
Yeah.
It's Joe Gibbs.
That's it. Yes.
Yes. I mean, Chuck Knoll won with the same quarterback. Vince Lombardi won with the same quarterback. Bill Walsh won with the same quarterback. It was George Seifert who won with Steve Young, not Bill Walsh.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah. And Shula, you know, got, you know, to another Super Bowl without Greasy with Marino, but didn't win it. Landry had, you know, Morton in a Super Bowl that he didn't win. The Super Bowls that he won were with Staubach at the helm when they won Super Bowl
and
six.
Actually,
and then
Parcells won with two different quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Parcells won with Sims and Hosteller. Exactly.
Yeah.
So we stand corrected on that. I know. So on the Sean Payton thing, for those that missed it, Sean Payton eviscerated Nathaniel Hackett and the Broncos staff and organization for being what he called a part of, quote, one of the worst coaching jobs in the history of the NFL. He said, quote, it doesn't happen often where an NFL team or an organization gets embarrassed, and that happened here. Part of it was their own fault relative to spending so much bleeping time trying to win the offseason, the PR, the pomp and circumstance, marching people around and all this stuff. We're not doing any of that. And then he made reference to the 2000 Redskins.
Yeah.
He said, remember when Snyder put that dream team together? I was with the Giants. I was a young coach. I thought, how are we going to compete with them? Deion Sanders is there now. That team won 8 games or whatever. Just put the work in. There is. Look, Sean Payton, we've talked about this many times, including the last week or so. And that gets into the, you know, hiring of a key football person. Sean Payton on XM Sirius, the Adam Schein show, you know, a few months ago, said that one of the Washington bidders reached out to him to gauge interest. And you and I talked about that, and I said I thought that was kind of Bush League. You know, Ron Rivera's coaching that team. That's, you know, that's kind of, I think, within the coaching circles, that's a no-no to say that you were contacted by ownership publicly.
You don't go after a man's job like that.
Right. Yeah. But more importantly, now I think there's a pretty good chance that it was the Harris Group that reached out to Sean Payton. Because, Tommy, there's only it was either Harris, Apostolopoulos, or Tillman Fertitta. They were the only bidders. I don't think he was ever close to even thinking about bidding on this team, if he were even going to be allowed. So I forget if I talked about this with you the other day. You know that Josh Harris, who's in sports as an owner, Magic Johnson, who's in sports as a legend and an owner, they have reached out to people about being involved in running the football operation here. There's no chance that they haven't, right?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, and on the business side, too. I mean, they have. I mean, this is a guy who owns two North American sports franchises and owned a piece of the Steelers.
Right.
I mean, he knows the people in the league. Okay, he probably knows who's the hot guy in front offices and who's not. You know, he knows who he probably wants and who he doesn't. And I'd be disappointed if Josh Harris had not reached out to Sean Payton,
right?
And not gauged his interest.
Right.
I wouldn't want it to be public, but yeah.
You know, as arrogant as he is, Sean Payton also has a very he's very knowledgeable about this particular market and what this team meant to the city. He spoke about that in that interview when he said that one of the bidders reached out to him. And he talked about how great Washington was when he was in New York with Parcells and how it's just incredible to watch how the thing has crumbled over the last quarter century. You know, Ron knew it too, but Payton, because he was in the division and with Parcells, would have had a real keen sense as to what this opportunity was. But, you know, they couldn't do anything, and he had to take the job in Denver with, by the way, a pretty strong ownership group as well. And that ownership group did not hire Nathaniel Hackett. Remember, he was already hired when they took over the team. The Walton Penner Group last summer. But, yeah, somebody is going to have soon a list of people, or a very short list of people, that Josh Harris and Magic Johnson have reached out to. Don't you think?
Yes, I do. Now, I believe that if they do their due diligence, Jim Harbaugh should be on that list.
Oh. look, he had an opportunity in Minnesota last year. They didn't hire him. He's had these opportunities, and after interviews, he has not been the preferred candidate when he walked in appearing to be the preferred candidate. You know, after he didn't get the Minnesota job, he essentially said, I'm at Michigan for good. He's going to get suspended, by the way, just for the first four games of this season.
For the first four games. Playing the little sisters of the poor in those games.
Yeah,
too.
But he's, you know, Michigan's made two straight Final Four playoff trips. They've beaten Ohio State two times in a row. And he is back, you know, in good graces with what is, you know, one of the true passionate fan bases in all of sports.
If you want to, I mean, this is a guy who wore out his welcome in San Francisco. And that's his reputation, although he's been at Michigan for a long time. So if you want a guy to make a big impact and also be a good football coach, knowing that you'll probably fire him after 4 years because you'll be sick of him, but still, you want to hit the ground running if you're the new owners. And you don't want to be stupid about it, but a investing in a guy who could be a short-term hire, when I mean within like 4 or 5 years, a guy like Harbaugh, who's such high-profile star power, I think it's worth a look.
Here's why I don't think Jim Harbaugh would be on the list. I think that Josh Harris has already, you know, mentioned analytics and data. Everybody that has studied Josh Harris as the owner of the 76ers understands that guys like Hinkie and guys like Daryl Morey are the kinds of guys he likes. That's not Harbaugh. Harbaugh is straight old school, and so is Rivera. You know, Rivera talks about analytics. I don't even think he understands what he's talking about when he discusses it. I think he's going to be looking for, you know, a Jeff Ireland or a Dimitroff type, somebody like that, to come in as a true general manager and then let that person find, you know, a head coach that's a like mind with the GM and with the owner. That would be my guess, which actually is a good segue into the conversation you and I want to have, which is about Ron Rivera and this, you know, whether or not there's an opportunity for him to stick around. But we'll get to that in the next segment. But that I don't think that Harbaugh is a Josh Harris or whomever he hires as the general manager will be their kind of guy. That's just my guess.
You're probably right in that sense, in the football sense. But here's some analytics where it could make some sense without being a stupid hire. Okay, attendance in the stands, promoting the team.
Mm-hmm. True, you know? True.
I think a presence like Jim Harbaugh would give them instant credibility among the fan base. And it's not like you'd be hiring him just for that. He's a good football coach.
Yeah.
Let's make that clear, right?
Right. He is. He is, Tommy. He is. He's won everywhere he has gone. Sometimes I actually think that his brother is a better football coach. And I think John Harbaugh has been so underrated. Now, I think he's been too much into the, you know, in-game 2-point fourth down analytics here over the last years, but, you know, basically getting sucked in by all of these people that don't understand that context and game situation have to play a big role in these decisions as well. And I've been critical of that with John Harbaugh, but man, there's something about what he gets out of his teams. And sometimes his brother has come up a bit short. By the way, including against his brother in the Super Bowl.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. There are a couple of Chiefs executives that are going to be guys that get talked about for the upcoming season. Mike Borgonzi and Brant Tillis are two guys that have been working in that organization for a while now. There are some guys around the league. We'll see what happens with a guy like Ballard in Indianapolis, if that works out with the new situation there. There are going to be some guys that are going to be listed. To figure out which guys make the most sense, I think we're going to have to look at the guys that are heavy on data, heavy on analytics, and speak that Josh Harris language, that Sam Hinkie, that Daryl Morey language, even though I would argue that, you know, the NFL is completely different than the NBA when it comes to things like that. Anyway, I want to get to this conversation that I had on radio yesterday with you about Ron Rivera and what he'd need to do to stick around in 2024. We'll do that right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This segment of the show brought to you by MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.com or MyBookie.ag. Use my promo code, KevinDC, to secure a first deposit bonus of $1,000, up to $1,000. By the way, a week from today will be the day after the first NFL preseason game. The Hall of Fame game is next Thursday. It's the Jets and the Browns. If you want to bet it, the Browns are 1.5-point favorites, and the total's 33.5. I doubt we'll see Deshaun Watson or Aaron Rodgers in this game. But think about this, Tommy. This is actually the last weekend without NFL football until the weekend after the Super Bowl. Well, I guess the weekend between the championship games and the Super Bowl. But starting next week, we've got a game on Thursday, and then the following week is week one, the first full week one of the preseason. So enjoy this final weekend without any NFL football. Technically, next weekend doesn't have football. It's a Thursday night game. But go to mybookie.com, mybookie.ag. By the way, the over-under on Washington still at 6.5 wins for the upcoming season. So what does Ron Rivera need to do to come back in 2024? I'll let you answer it first, and then you can quantify it as part of your answer, but I think it's a lot more than just a record. But go ahead, you take the first swing.
Well, I don't want to say win the division because he's already done that. With a losing record.
Yeah.
Right. Got to win a playoff game. Got to win a playoff game. I think he's got to get the double-digit wins.
Is that it?
It can't be an accidental. Yeah. What else is there? You must have something in mind.
Well, I just thought I would get something a little bit deeper from you.
What's so difficult about it?
Well, I'll tell you why it's difficult. Because of what we were just talking about in the last segment. I don't think that Ron Rivera, more likely than not, is a good fit for Josh Harris. Ron Rivera is an old school coach. Remember, Tepper took over. Tepper was big into data and the whole thing. He kept Ron for that first year and then cut him loose when they fell to 5-7 after they lost to Washington. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. In that second year. Ron Rivera is an old school coach. So is Jack Del Rio. The staff is totally old school, including Bieniemy. And I just see the only possibility. On radio yesterday, I said it's got to be double digit wins, 10 wins minimum, and one playoff win. And the other part of that would be
what I just said.
I know, but that's all you said. The other part of that would be Ron has really proven to Josh that he's the guy that shares the vision for a sustained run. And the other part of that would be the quarterback, that they got Sam Howell right. Because you could go 9-8 or 10-7 and get into the postseason and win a game flukishly with Jacoby Brissett and that defense. But that isn't a future. That's not sustained winning with a chance to win the Super Bowl in the next 3 to 5 years. So I think there's a lot more than just the record. But the record is crucial because without the record and without a playoff appearance, well, then it's an easy decision for Josh. But I still think there's actually a way he could win 10, win a playoff game, and not be back if he's not the right fit. If Jacoby Brissett was the starting quarterback, if the quarterback question is still a question mark at the end of this upcoming season, which means...
I'll grant you that. The quarterback issue is a big component of it. You're right about that.
That's Ron's biggest mistake.
He's got a track record here of screwing it up every single year.
No doubt. Because you can... And I've done this, and some of you have reached out and you have essentially told me that you have vomited in your mouth as I have said nice things about Ron Rivera the last couple of shows. But you could make the case that this roster, as we've said before, is the best overall roster that they've had in years. Okay? A lot of the best players understood were not selected by this particular group, but many of them have been. But Ron screwed up the quarterback year in and year out. And that's the biggest, you know, negative in terms of Ron the GM. They haven't gotten the quarterback right. And by the way, he was adamant last year before the Chicago game about how right he was about Carson Wentz. And so he's messed that up. And really, you know, he messed up potentially the first opportunity he had in 2020 to get the quarterback because he gave in, I think, on the idea that Snyder wanted to see Dwayne Haskins through. And I don't believe that Ron Rivera was bought into Dwayne Haskins when he took the job. I'm not saying that he didn't think that there was a chance, but what made that easy, by the way, or for them in terms of justifiably, you know, at any point in time, in the moment, Chase Young was considered to be the best pass rushing prospect coming out in the draft since probably Myles Garrett or Von Miller. And so I wanted him to select Chase Young, and there was very little criticism of not picking Tua or Justin Herbert. I know some of you are listening have said, you know, remember, Sheehan, I told you they needed to take Justin Herbert or Tua. You're right. You turned out to be right. But the overall was, Chase Young was the right pick. Obviously, you go back and redraft, and you take Justin Herbert, you know. And it's not even a thought. Anyway, I don't personally. I think you know this is Ron's last year as the head coach. I think it's definitely Ron's last year as the head football decision maker. He's not going to have both jobs this time next year. The only way that happens is if they go 12-5, 13-4, and they're in the Super Bowl. Or at least in the NFC Championship game. You know, that's the thing about, Ron and the name. If the Commanders and Ron Rivera, if they end up being the surprise team of the NFL and they win 13 games, win the division, have home field advantage, and go to the Super Bowl, Ron's staying and so is the name more likely than not. It's not saying I'm going to be sitting here rooting against them having a good season, but the truth is they're not going to the Super Bowl this year. They're not anywhere near as good as Philadelphia or San Francisco or Dallas or four. Look, their 6.5 number is there for a reason. Although I kind of like the over again, like I did last year, and I won on their over.
I've always liked the over. Every year that they've given it out for the past 4 or 5 years, I've picked the over.
Yeah. Have you?
Yes.
Hmm.
Because it's been 7.5 most years.
Right. Okay. By the way, talking about the 2020 draft, I saw something a few weeks ago, and I'm trying to find it right now. USA Today did a redrafting of the 2020 draft, and there was something in there that totally surprised me. And it was where Chase Young was picked. Washington was number two. Remember, Cincinnati picked Burrow. Still no word specifically on the injury to Burrow yesterday. You know, it's non-contact. It's the calf. I haven't seen anything definitive on the injury. It doesn't seem like it's so serious, but who knows. But Cincinnati, you know, takes Burrow again. Washington takes, obviously, Justin Herbert. But what was surprising, and I'm trying to pull up that list here, is that Chase Young was picked, I think it was seventh. Like, he only dropped to seven. Here it is. The redrafting 2020, this was in USA Today in earlier this month. Joe Burrow 1, Justin Herbert to Washington 2, Justin Jefferson to Detroit 3. That makes sense because Okuda was the third pick there. Andrew Thomas to the Giants at 4, Jalen Hurts to Miami at 5, not Tua. Tua to the Chargers at 6, and Chase Young to the Panthers at 7. Seriously? I mean, he still has talent. I get it. But I would have thought when I saw that, I'm like, I don't know, if I'm redrafting 2020, I am dropping Chase Young further down that list. Like, I'm looking at guys, you know, Jonathan Taylor, T. Higgins, CeeDee Lamb, Trayvon Diggs, Tristan Wirfs, all were redrafted after Chase Young. Speaking of Chase Young, I did watch his presser with after practice yesterday, and he does seem to be, as he was for the mini camp that he showed up for, he seems to be super confident, and it seems like he wasn't super confident. He was more hesitant last year. I'm really looking forward to seeing what kind of year Chase Young has, because he is talented. I mean, he's talented. And if there's growth, maturity-wise and otherwise, and he plays to the level that we thought he could play at and that he was playing at the end of his rookie year, look out. This defense will be dominant. Dominant.
Yes, because look what they did with Chase Young basically out of the picture.
Right.
Yes.
Guess who is on the semifinalist list for the Hall of Fame? Joe Jacoby. We'll get to that and more, including an unbelievable doubleheader for Shohei Ohtani yesterday. We'll get to all of that right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, Tommy, tell us about Shelly's.
Shelly's Back Room at 1331 F Street Northwest. It's going to be pretty hot today and for the next couple of days. And I've always referred to Shelly's as an oasis, and that's exactly what it is. You walk into Shelly's, you know, you've got this beautiful, nice wooden panels all around you, these beautiful, comfortable big cushion chairs and couches, great lighting. It's the kind of place, you know, I used to like to go to the movies in the afternoon, sometimes on days like this, because I had the feeling that you could go in there and the world could end outside and you wouldn't know about it. You know, because you were protected in this, well, that's the way Shelly's is. You're protected in there. You're protected from the outside forces, and you're given a gift of the inside forces of great liquor, great food, and the best cigars you can find anywhere. Shelly's Back Room at 1331 F Street Northwest in the district. You can find more about them. Go to shellysbackroom.com.
Rate us and review us on Apple and Spotify if you get a chance. It's really helpful for us. It takes 30 seconds. You could pause the podcast right now if you haven't rated us and reviewed us. Five stars, a quick 1 to 2 sentences is really helpful. This from Muhammad, who gave us 5 stars and titled his review, Kevin and Hemingway. Kevin, as a listener from 2011, from 2011, who has never called in, it was great to meet you on Thursday at the bullpen. Yeah, there were a lot of our listeners there, Tommy. I wish you had been with me. I appreciate your hospitality in speaking with all of your listeners. I will never understand people who say the name doesn't matter, such as the listener Evan, who wrote you this week. Perhaps it wouldn't matter in another city, in any other city, but it means something here because the Redskins meant something. People act like Commanders is replacing some generic name, but it's attempting to hold the same weight as one of the greatest sports brands of all time and failing miserably in its attempt. Anyways, I'm really looking forward to Tom's return this week and getting his thoughts on the ownership change. The aura of self-destruction is over. Keep doing what you do, and I hope to hang out with you and hopefully Tom next time as well. Thank you very much, Muhammad, for that review. I really appreciate it. This from Heatski, by the way, perfect name for this week because it is excessively hot. Third-generation fan gave us 5 stars on Apple. I've been a Washington fan since my first game at RFK in 1970 when I was 3. My family had season tickets for over 70 years. Win or lose, I will always be a fan. Kevin Sheehan is the kind of football genius that makes following this team fun and informative. Even through all the ups and downs, I never miss a show. Tommy, that's a first. Thank you very much, Heatski. I'm a football genius. Maybe they should hire me to be the general manager of the team next year. That was very nice.
You haven't written a letter asking them to do that yet, have you?
No, but you know what? Scott always makes fun of me for a letter. I think I've told this story before. I'm sure I've told this story before. So Norv Turner was the coach. It was, you know, 1996 or 97 or whatever. And they were down they were down by 1 point and had no timeouts left. And the other team was running regular plays. Well, we now know, you know, some 25 years later, well, you try to let them score. And then you're down 8 and you get the ball back and you actually have a chance, right? And Norv had his defense tackling people as the clock ran out and they lost by a point. So I sent via Federal Express a letter to Norv Turner. And Scott to this day still makes fun of me. He's like, you're a clown. You think he's going to read that letter? What are you doing? Like, he's a football, he's getting paid millions. You're just on your couch watching. And I said, still, I'm right. Like, I am right, and I'm going to write this letter to him. So I wrote a letter to Norv Turner, and instead of mailing it, I Federal Expressed it, thinking, well, he'll get it because it's being sent Federal Express. And I explained to him that in that particular game, if he had just let them score, he would have gotten the ball back with an actual chance to tie the game with a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. And all I got back maybe like 3 months later was this form letter from, you know, signed with stamped signature of Norv Turner saying, thank you so much for being a great fan. Thanks for your interest. Go Redskins! ! So that's all I got.
Well,
back.
You needed Norv to be like George Allen.
Right.
Remember, Charlie Tassily wrote to all NFL teams asking for a job. Now, Charlie Tassily was a high school football coach
right.
at the time.
Yes.
And he wrote to all NFL teams asking for any kind of job, anything. You know, and I think there were two. I think Chuck Knox was one of them, maybe. I could be wrong about that. But George Allen was another one. And basically, George Allen gave him an unpaid internship job.
Yeah.
And Charlie parlayed it into being NFL general manager, not only here in Washington, but in Houston.
Right.
So that's what you needed Norv to have a little bit more George Allen in him. saying, Kevin, you can come here. I can't pay you, but here's a broom.
Maybe I should have sent it to Charlie. That's probably I should have sent it to Charlie Casserly, because Charlie may have appreciated that, or
yes,
or he would
have.
Yeah. But anyway, so Joe Jacoby made it to the next step, which is a semifinalist for the senior committee for the class of 2024. That's not this year's class, okay? This year's class gets inducted next week, you know, with the Hall of Fame game, which we'll watch between the Jets and the Browns. We'll watch at least a series or two of it. The next step is for the committee to meet in August to select up to three senior candidates. The finalists will be part of the class of 2024 if they are supported by at least 80% of the voters. There are 12 candidates that the list was whittled down to. Those candidates include Roger Craig, Ken Anderson, who I think you can make the case should be in the Hall of Fame, Randy Gratishar, Otis Taylor, Tommy, Art Powell, Maxie Bond, Joe Jacoby, Albert Lewis, Steve McMichael, Eddie Medor, Sterling Sharp, and Al Wistert. Those are for the senior part of the Hall of Fame. So, look, I think Jake's going to eventually get in. I do. And I hope it's this coming class. You know, if there are three out of this list, if they're going to whittle this list down to three, I think it's Ken Anderson, Otis Taylor, and Joe Jacoby. Those would be the three. By the way, Mike Shanahan and Marty Schottenheimer both ended up making the next stage for the contributors and coaches entry into the 2024 Hall of Fame. So they've advanced in Hall of Fame consideration as well, and we've been through this, but you know, to me, Schottenheimer and Shanahan both belong in the Hall of Fame. And
I agree.
Ian sent me something a few weeks ago saying...
Who? I'm not familiar with this individual.
Ian, longtime caller. He calls all the time. He used to call us.
I don't
us.
Remember who he is.
Oh, that's right. You had a beef with him. Sorry. Well, this guy Joe sent me this note about Schottenheimer saying Schottenheimer doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. You've got to have won... You've got to have at least gotten to a Super Bowl to be in the Hall of Fame. And I pointed out that Don Coryell is in the Hall of Fame, and Don Coryell never went to the Super Bowl either. I don't think that that's a prerequisite. Marty is seventh all-time in wins. He's top 10 all-time win percentage. It's his playoff record, obviously, that has held him back. Everybody knows that. But Marty was, for his generation of coaches, one of the most respected coaches and one of the best coaches in the game for multiple decades. And Mike Shanahan, beyond the fact that he's won two Super Bowls, was truly an innovator in the game as well. You know, all of this discussion about the running backs, you know, and running backs being devalued, and people talk about, you know, when did that begin? It began with Mike Shanahan after Terrell Davis retired, and Mike Shanahan was using guys like Olandis Gary and Tatum Bell and eventually Alfred Morris and Ryan Terrain, who were running for big yards in the zone run scheme, which Alex Gibbs was a big part of with Mike Shanahan as well. So I think both of those men deserve Hall of Fame consideration, and hopefully Jake will get in as well. I really hope it's I don't want to continue to have this conversation about Jake. Randy White and Lawrence Taylor, who are two of the greatest NFL players at their positions in history, to me, Lawrence Taylor is the greatest football player of my lifetime. The greatest NFL player, offense or defense, of my lifetime. Both of them have said Joe Jacoby is a Hall of Fame tackle, period.
Yes.
So I just...
Absolutely. You know, and I'm going to make this commitment now. I'm not going to put you on the spot to make the same commitment. If Jake gets in the Hall of Fame, I'm going out there.
I'll go with you. I've never been to Canton, okay. So that would be one of the reasons I'd want to do it. But if Jake gets in, we're going. We're going.
Yes.
It might. By the way, it might be 1 year from today.
Yes.
Good luck, Jake.
Absolutely.
A couple of other quick things. Colorado's leaving the Pac-12 for the Big 12. The Pac-12 is going to disappear, people. I mean, the Pac-8, the Pac-10, the Pac-12. UCLA and USC are gone, and now Colorado, who was, you know, not a longtime Pac-12 member. Now the discussion is Arizona State and Arizona potentially to the Big 12. We've already heard the discussion about Oregon. West Coast college football, the Pac-12. You know, it's late October, early November, starting to get cold on the East Coast. The sun's already down, and it's 4:45 in the afternoon. And there on ABC is UCLA against Oregon from the Rose Bowl, or USC in the Coliseum against Arizona. And we're still going to have those schools playing football, but they're going to be playing football in different leagues. And the Pac-12 is going to cease, I think, to be a Power 5 conference. Just, I hate all of this. I hate all of it. Colorado moving is not a big deal because Colorado's been a bit of a vagabond anyway. But no Pac-12? The Pac-12 basically becoming a nothing league? I mean, who's going to be left? Washington, Washington State, Stanford, Cal, maybe one of the Arizona schools, maybe one of the Oregon schools. I mean, it is going to be small time. Utah, I guess. Anyway, weird.
There's a lost sense of tradition in college football these days.
Totally lost, and yet it's still so great. The greatest sprint of a regular season in all of sports for me. The college football regular season, and I think it'll still feel this way when the playoff is expanded. I don't think that the expansion of the playoff is going to mean much because these games are still going to be significant games. They won't be elimination games, but they will late in the season from one of those spots. But it starts, you know, Labor Day weekend, actually the weekend before, and it's over, you know, with the conference championship weekend in early December, and it is great. I mean, I've said this for years, and I am being totally honest and sincere. I think I like college football just a little bit more than pro football. Saturdays, to me, are better than Sundays, and I love Sundays. But, man, college football is great. And, yeah, there is a sense of, well, where are they now? You know, we've had this for a while.
Yeah.
But it's really going to be weird when UCLA and USC are playing Maryland, you know, in a Big Ten game. By the way, the Terps are going to be good in football this year. Locks is going to – he's got his best team coming back. They've won two straight bowl games. I'm looking forward to Maryland football this year.
I think they'll be good as well.
Yeah. So
he's done a better job than I thought he would have.
Done a great job. And once UCLA and USC enter the league, they will go away from the divisions and the schedule will become more manageable. They won't get Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State every single year. That's been really, really difficult in the Big Ten for them. So how about Ohtani in a doubleheader yesterday, Tommy? He pitched a shutout in the first game and then hit two home runs in the second game.
A one-hitter, I think. I think it was a one-hitter.
It was a one-hit shutout in the first game yesterday. And he then hit two bombs in the second game. Are you kidding me? This is the first time anything like this has ever happened.
Yes. This is beyond the scope of imagination. This is unprecedented. There's no comparable to this. I just wish it was on a bigger stage. I just wish there was more attention being paid to it. Because it's such a remarkable task. And like I said, what I would have done, the Angels did not trade Ohtani. They decided to go all in on a run to make the wild card and the playoff.
Well, it's not
they
over
just
yet.
Traded for Lucas Giolito.
I know. Because of the Giolito trade, that means they're not trading Ohtani. They're going for it this year.
Right. And I've adopted a philosophy, and it's totally arbitrary. that if your team is within five games of a wild card at the trade deadline, mm-hmm. then you want them to compete for that wild card. Don't raise the white flag when your team is only five games out of a wild card spot on August 1st.
Okay, I'm looking at the standings right now. Five games out in the American League wildcard race are the Cleveland Guardians, and they are a game over 500. The Cubs are four games out, and then the Padres are 6.5 games out. They're five games under 500. So the Padres, you would be okay if they're a seller,
yes.
But you would not be okay if the Cubs are a seller.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No, that's my... And the reason that's the number I came up with from when the Orioles in '96 were five games out of the second year of the wild card.
Yeah.
And Pat Gillick, who I respect tremendously, was ready to break the team up and trade for some prospects because he was used to competing for division titles. And Peter Angelos, the only time of his life in baseball, said, no, we're not going to break them up. And they were about five games out of the wild card. So I think that's my arbitrary number.
I watched the Nats game, and then the rains came in the eighth, and I actually looked at the result this morning. I didn't stick around for the resumption of the game. But, man, they have been playing well. Josiah Gray pitched awesome last night. Dickerson had an unbelievable catch in the outfield. C.J. Abrams, except for the last at-bat, had some really, really good at-bats again. They're really, they had won 7 of 9 coming in, and they lost a 2-1 decision on a sac fly last night late in Queens. But good on the Nats that they are really pesky as a team with some with that young talent that everybody hoped would be the foundation for something down the road, really proving itself. So I'll ask you, with the trade deadline a few days away, who's getting dealt? Candelario, Thomas, who's getting dealt?
Candelario is getting dealt.
Okay.
Okay, he's their most tradable commodity. Thomas, my position is the same, I think, as Mike Rizzo's, in that – if he gets an offer that he can't refuse for Thomas, he'll take it, okay? Otherwise, they'll hang on to Thomas, who's under contract for 2 more years, okay, which makes him attractive. He's under control of whatever team has him. The question of Thomas is he at his peak? Is this the best Thomas can be, or is this how Thomas will continue the rest of his career? Either way, unless you get a deal that knocks your socks off, you hang on to this guy. Because even if he has shown that even if this isn't his best year, he's good enough, like I said, to be a fourth outfielder on a pennant contending team.
Right.
And would be a valuable commodity to have. So I wouldn't trade Thomas unless they had a great offer. But I think Candelario's going, maybe one or two of the relief pitchers, Hunter Harvey, somebody else will be going. So the Nats are playing just great, just in time to lose some of their key parts for the rest of the season. But you talked about, C.J. Abrams has really broken out.
Oh, yeah.
And he is the shortstop of the future. There are two young pitchers. Here we are on the brink of August, and Josiah Gray is still pitching outstanding baseball. I think what he pitched 6 innings of shutout ball yesterday, maybe,
yeah.
Or I forget what it was.
Yeah, he was great.
And Mackenzie Gore pitching
awesome.
Well too.
He pitches tomorrow again. I think against Scherzer, or is it tonight?
I don't know.
I'm looking. I think he's matched up against Max tonight. Tonight it's Gore against Max Scherzer.
I mean, Calbert Ruiz. Has been a bit of a disappointment, I think, for them, and the jury's still on him. But three out of that, and you've got Luis Garcia at second. You've got four out of their five real prospects on that team that have been performing well for them. That's a pretty good hit so far. I think they're going to be pretty competitive next year, depending on who owns the team, depending on which ownership is committed to spending money to complement these young players. They can't go through another season of an $80 million payroll open to compete. You know, you've got to bring in some talent to surround these young players, and the young players like a James Woods and Cade Cavalli, who may be coming up next year.
C.J. Abrams is hitting .338, and he's got a .398 on-base percentage in the month of July. I mean, those numbers would put him in the top three, four in the entire major leagues if that was for a season. He's really broken out. All right, look, you're heading out. When are you heading out? Tomorrow? When do you leave?
Monday morning.
You're leaving Monday morning.
Monday.
So theoretically, we could do a podcast together on Sunday. One last show. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Where are you going? I forget. You're going somewhere north, right?
I'm going somewhere north of Madrid, a town called Las Navias.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small mountain town.
Right.
Maybe about a half an hour away from Segovia, an hour from Madrid. It's the kind of place where people go to escape the hot summer of Madrid.
Right.
There's a lot of my wife's relatives who spend their summers in this town, and that's what we're going to do. We got a huge house. I've got a beer keg on tap that'll be waiting for me when I get there, courtesy of one of Liz's cousins who owns one of the two bars in town.
Oh, really?
And I hope to do a little bit of writing, not newspaper writing, but, you know, my own little project kind of writing.
How's that going? How's the screenplay, the treatment thing going for your...
It's not a treatment. It's a screenplay.
The screenplay. How's the screenplay coming along? And is Howard helping?
Well, Howard is out of the country right now, I think,
right.
As you
he
know.
Is. Yes.
So he's you know, got things on his plate. He's a very busy man, but he has some in his possession, and he has had discussions with them. And, you know, look, I got a lottery ticket, and they haven't picked the winner yet. Okay?
All right. I'm praying for that. I mean, I think I would certainly be invited to the Emmy Awards is it a TV show or is it a movie? I forget.
It's a movie. It's a movie. You'll be invited to the red carpet premiere.
Yeah, that's what I want to make sure I get an invite to.
I'm going to be working on another screenplay.
I'd like a mention when you get your Academy Award, when you're listing all the people that helped get you there.
I will.
All right. We're done for the day. Have a good weekend. Back on Monday. Tommy, have a great trip.
All right, good boss.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.